I think I'd like to open the open mic with a Frank O'Hara poem that I think is very fun and would be a good way of introducing the rest of the audience. It's a Frank O'Hara poem called Autobiographia Literaria. When I was a child, I played by myself in a corner of the schoolyard, all alone. I hated dolls and I hated games. Animals were not friendly and birds flew away. If anyone was looking for me, I hid behind a tree and cried out, "I am an orphan!" And here I am, the center of all beauty, writing these poems. Imagine! Now is your chance to be the center of all beauty. The open mic is going to begin with Fergus Costello.
Thank you. Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is a story of obsessive love, physical and mental cruelty and violence. My favourite adaptation is the 1939 black and white film starring a youthful Laurence Olivier. Tonight I give you my own version. I call it Wuthering Heights, comma, the black and white Reader's Digest abridged audio version, comma, for people who are either too busy or too lazy to bother their arses reading books, comma, delivered in a dodgy Cork accent for no other reason than a voice in my head suggested it. Oops. Hey, Cliff.
Catty.
Oh, Heathcliff.
Oh, Catty.
Heathcliff, why can't we stay out here on the moor together, you and me, forever? I don't care if you have poor raggedy trousers out here on the moor. You're my lord, Heathcliff.
Oh, Catty.
You're my queen, Zoyelle. Heathcliff?
What is it now, Catty?
Heathcliff, I've just had an epiphany.
You know what?
An epiphany, boy. Can't you see the moor is a metaphor for wild and free, and we can be whoever our destiny wants us to be?
Huh?
Heathcliff, now I know my true identity.
Your true identity?
Who do you think you are, Teddy? Catwoman or something? No, Heathcliff. My identity existentially, now I know who I really am. And who do you think you are, Cathy? Heathcliff, I am. Heathcliff. Heathcliff. Oh, for fuck, listen here to me, girl. There's only two of us out here on the moor. Have you been eating the mushrooms off the moor again, Cathy? Listen, there's only two of us here. One of us is Heathcliff and the other one is Cathy. And Cathy, from where I stand, you look like Cathy. Cathy. You're wearing a dress and, if you don't mind me saying so, you have two only to die for. Fantastic breast. Do you really like them, Heathcliff? Chocolate dung, girl, chocolate dung. Fair's fair, what you have there is one serious pair. And, Catty, and this is the clincher, Catty, you have soft hands, whereas on the other hand, I have poor raggedy trousers and I have dirty hands. Ah, Heathcliff, I just have dirty hands for bye. Don't you know I can never marry a fellow with dirty hands? Ah, Catty Earnshaw, you're an awful snob, do you know that? You're begging for a smack in the gob, do you know that? Heathcliff, why can't we just run away together? Because, Catty, you run like a girl. You wouldn't be able to keep up with me. Ah, Heathcliff, why do you always have to wind me up? Because, Catty, you remind me of a clock. A clock wearing a dress. A clock with, you know, a couple of fantastic dresses. They are nice, aren't they, Heathcliff? Go on, you may squeeze them once or twice if you like. Well, I'd like to know, Catty, is to squeeze your head in the vice. And I will if you don't shut up. Now I can't remember what I was talking about. You said I remind you of a clock. That's right, Catty, you remind me of a clock. What sort of a clock? A clock with soft hands. What sort of a clock has soft hands, Catty? A Salvador Dali clock, that's what. Heathcliff!
Why can't we just run away together? Because, Cathy, it's all over now. And, Cathy, you are driving me totally crazy off the wall. Why don't you just go and fake off?
Fake off yourself, Heathcliff. Come back, Cathy.
Come back, Heathcliff. Wuthering Heights will never be the same again. The end.
Right, next up is Sue Blue. And after that, on a little outlet, I have to do something serious. Right. It's called Butchering the Trees. Today I wake up to the growls and grinds of metal teeth, screeching through timber, the breaking of branches, crashing, they thump to the ground. You think that trees are silent, but I can hear them scream. Each time another limb is cut and clattering down to earth, I feel their lifeblood drain. The chopper chomps like little twigs, the biggest branches groan from gnarled and knotted boughs, shredding them with roaring howls to tiny bits of nothing. These ancient mighty trees, older than the men who chop them, stand proud until they sink to kneel, their power melting away now as their souls scream out. I stand in shock and feel their pain, hearing their wailing squeal, the eerie sound of the banshee, the spirit of the tree leaves home as limb by limb goes down. And in my soul their cry echoes, rising tears like sap reaching out my eyes as they crack and fall to ground, my throat and heart well open. And for them I scream and sob, why are ye butchering these trees. Thank you, Sue. Next up is Sandra Beasley.
I have amazing students this term. I'm so excited. I'm teaching at UCC, and I got to hear a number of voices tonight who I'll have in workshop. I'm here for 3 months. I love being here for 3 months. I travel all the time. The only downside is I have a cat who, yeah. So the cat's, we adopted her. She's an elderly cat. Her previous owner died. The owner died and no one in the family would take her in. So when I go away, she thinks I died every time. I travel a lot. The upside is I come back. This poem is for them. Lazarus. The cat flops and swims along the carpet, ecstatic in her clawing. I am alive. Despite my 3 days absence, thus my death. She could vomit in sheer joy, and later she will. But for now, it's headbutts and the pantomime of mewing with her jaw that ached and ran dry of sound after my first night gone. Though I know each of us would be better off if she did not care quite so much, if she displayed the feline diffidence promised. Water, kibble, company, she'll be fine. I confess to delighting in this small miracle I perform in her eyes, this resurrection. After a brief pause to lovingly tend to her own asshole, my cat resumes her yawp and purr. Could I learn to greet the world this way? Taking nothing for granted. First, I have to thank all of you had died, of course. But each time, only temporary. Truth is, I've tried otter roots to ecstasy.
Thank you, Sandra. Next is Mary O'Connell.
Thanks, Ben. This doesn't need any explanation. It's called What Now? Brexit is the exit that is now expired. The backstop was a stopgap that has just backfired. May Day is a grey day when distress is real. Who'll go back to Brussels for a better deal? How could she manage to keep the boat afloat when May lost so badly in the Commons vote? Boris Johnson, Farage, and Jacob Rees-Mogg. No doubt each is itching to end up top dog, while Corbyn is cagily biding his time. Tory backbenchers could cross over a line. Would a second referendum clear the air? Or a general election cause a scare? There seems no way out of this unholy mess. What we'll end up with is anybody's guess.
Thank you, Mary. Jacob Rees-Mogg's own company have moved their funds out of Britain.
Oh, wasn't he a wise guy?
Over to Dublin.
I know.
No flies on him.
Next up is Philip Spillane.
So it's quite unfortunate how this came about. So it was around this time 5 years ago I started coming to Avail, and it's basically changed my life. But I think I've been working in computer science and computers a bit longer, and I never thought the two of them would collide, but somehow they have. And now I gave birth to a very fascinating caricature called the Server Hermit, who lives in the server room as a hermit, away from society, and started off as a poem, a bit of a joke poem. Now it's a short story. Now it's going to probably end up as a novella, we see how it goes. So I'm going to try and do it without it written down, we see how it goes. And I feel like I have to turn around to become the persona.
Okay, go.
Hey! Whoa, the mic even went. The server hermit. Servers hum to their services like big boxy bits of Buddhas locked in iron cages, their green eyes winking at me as I pass on. I shift to the shuttle where air conditioners pull on the heat wave with this exhausting ice age. At the back lies a midnight black Dell Optiplex 960 with its dark braille door lying ajar. In there, its motherboard tingled electric emerald like Mother Earth. A boarded up circuit garden, pagoda chipsets, extensions and RAMs snowed under by flakes of dust. I clip, clip, clip in the USBs and screw in the lilac VGA. I shove a power cable up its backside. Finally, I press its Bondi and ignites its whole nature like a beast awakening from suspended meditation. The monitor blinks and displays its GUIs like psychedelic flowers in dawn. Tum-ti-tum-tum-tum, the Windows XP chimes. It tells me things it's doing and done, in passive mannerisms, like a fateful familiar. I subside in the hum of a sorrow forest, get away from the windy outside where elements can invade. Suddenly, the power supply coughs. The computer blinks out. And so do I. Join in if you want. You do this every day, actually. Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Now, did I read this one before? It's called Fugitive Noise. Did I read it before? No. Okay. It's called Fugitive Noise. Laughter commencing at a timed out joke dabbles away from duty, a central attention. Dissociating where needed, a cruel punchline. Sanity rescued at expensive diatribe. The unmarked fashion shows itself off. Parade through streets of glorious difference. Drinking coffee on a sliding scale. The home stretch always better at expense. Aborted creativity, an excuse not to bother. Cutting costs over tea time, quid pro quo. Suddenly treats go unwanted, go speedily back. Ugly buildings knocked down for the sake of peace. Being loved is crippling, sitting outside, the voicemail vomits its timely curse. Payment were missed, on pain of heart's fatigue. Marking monuments as a student album marks. Shorting long cuts, slicing to ribbons, the face that never saw effort, no tears, soliciting disaster over princess's stance, bereft to experience, mothball joy. Mobile abuse over silence communication, truth over beverage, a tiring exercise. My explanation is but the living colour, talking over failure, living at risk, be that as it may. Mystery tours wind up to discerning, blocking sanity. Expensive destinations rot money, careering through the menu again. Losing common touch, retrieved at will. Amplified summers suit the everyday. A hearty noise welcoming the plebeians. A sickening urge to realize your fate. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Next up is Pascal McDonald.
Thank you. This is called Like Father, Like Son. My father beat me when I could talk. He beat me some more when I could walk. And more again when I went to school. As he beat, he cried, "You fool, you fool." He beat me the more I grew, until one day I realized I knew that I was strong enough to hit back, and that's what I did, attack, attack. He then ceased to beat me after that, and went about like a scaredy cat. I beat my father whilst he could talk, I beat him some more whilst he could walk, more again when he began to drool. As I beat, I cried, "You fool, you fool." I beat him the more he grew, more feeble in state and sounding too. He was not strong enough to hit back, so all I did was attack, attack, till he ceased to breathe soon after that. Tell me now, who is the scaredy cat?
Opposite of time to appear. A concert comes to me natural, and the thought, which is time, passes. The corridors of self-consciousness are veiled and treacherous, the red curtains never open to the stage. It takes the opposite of thought and even the opposite of feeling to adhere. It takes emptiness to understand air and light and stick to colors and consistencies. I have no idea what it takes to be water. I don't know where you roam. You're as liquid as my nightmares. You're as liquid as my thoughts. And water always makes me want to be sick.
Thank you, Elisa. Next up is my partner in crime, Sean Lee Lynch.
They're the ones who robbed that little.
I started working on this project about a hotel that I'm going to start writing about all the different people and all the different rooms. So, Room 34, regeneration. Here you are, Mrs. Marlowe, her slender body whisked into the room, eyes surveying the white ceiling, down to the white carpet, across to the white bed sheets, back to the white curtains framing the glass door where the flickering lights from a busy city fluttered back at her. Satisfied with the familiarity, attention, she turns back to the door and the young man is relieved of his duty with a nod of approval. Once the lever clicks back into socket, she swaps her stilettos for the hotel's complimentary slippers. Cheap, she says aloud as she wiggles her manicured toes around the foreign fabric. Ceremonially, she lifts her suitcase to the bed and presents stark straightened garments, more white, cream and pastel options for tomorrow's luncheon. She waltzes them to the wardrobe. After inspecting the bathroom for any sign of careless housekeeping, she puts her designer wash bag on the marble sink. Like a surgeon laying out instruments with precision and patience, she extracts jars and pots of colourful elixirs, aromatic cremes of retinol, collagen and rosehip oils, each labelled with words like regenerative and ageless. Under a magnifying mirror, she begins applying each one to their designated place. The creases next to her eyes, the drooping skin between her jawline and neck, the rainbow-shaped bark from her nose to her mouth, each of which she spent years attempting to negate. She thinks about the women she will meet tomorrow, how they gather annually to flaunt furs and pearls, exchanging shallow pleasantries over china bone served high tea, discussing the business of others, in between small bites of crustless triangle sandwiches. They'll cover such topics as financial prospects, who has had Botox, divorcees, infidelities, and battles against expanding waistlines. None of their own, of course. As her current ritual commences, she straightens rogue bedsheet creases and sits, content, waiting for the time to pass by.
Thank you, Charlotte. Next up is our five words champion of the evening, Jim Crickard.
So this is called A Letter to My Inner Dreamer. How you fantasized with those emerald eyes. Everything at your fingertips, the world was your ashtray. How the rain passed out free samples of skin mist, and your reflection caught the gloss of shop windows. How the world seemed an endless bank balance. Queen Midas, you found diamonds in the sunlight. As reality seeps into the green lakes of your iris, an oil spill that fills the waters with the drudgery of customer service, I find myself asking if I have let you down. Am I doing you proud?
Next up is John Woods.
Ow, ow!
How are you? One common way that hidden is expressed in the Irish language is the wallach. Now, fallach literally is cloth, so hidden in this sense is to say literally in a cloth, clothed. Now, in Ireland, the Irish language is Iwalach. In English, the contours of the English that we speak are those of the Irish below. Certainly that's true of where I'm from, which is County Leitrim.
Ow!
Now, Moraine has a Leitrim connection. And uncle of mine kind of got me thinking recently about another sense in which Irish is Iwalach, beneath a cloth, something that you might want to pull a cloth back to come into contact with, and that possibility is there and drawn on at times where that can provide a real sense of closeness to home or an emotional comfort. And he remembered how my auntie, my great auntie in Manchester, and my granny in County Leitrim were gradually beginning to use more Irish in their letters to each other as they got closer to death. Both of them were ill. And he wanted me to write a letter for him. He moved to a new house, and to talk about, well, language and home, and to give him that kind of route for his new home. And I wrote the letter about a story of my own. I remembered a day my dad and I, we buried our pet dog. And on the same day, my mum was remarrying, and her husband, yeah, I know, the story now, wait till you hear. He actually was ill with lung cancer, and he died in the following days. And he had been a friend of my dad's, and he still was at this point. And it was a tough day for me, but definitely for my dad. I mean, the dog dying, that's a sign that the family is kind of gone. And yeah, it was a really tough day for him. And that was the first day when we went up to the hills to bury the dog. I heard him talk about the old Irish language place names, and it just struck me as something really remarkable. So this is a kind of a prose poem, and it's in letter form. So we're keeping the letter buzz going. Vincent, wa. Is minic with a cant, a reliachti, tach, treke, a tarnish, a retirement. Le queen tiva war, is a regan, nach lean mere, eid shin, non a tiche, in a bilcumni. Snakrik, be a de yichel, lean, tiwan, a arv, in I, naguig, warroch. Shen banu, a ekker, gunthul, agus, a solach a tool. Ach ni fasoch. Cant on grocanuas, agus on shansi lunal, the thaw eg bona a terman. Ni arian a fluish, gabanu, magr fasoch te a rud, a redugan to hain, the colour of language. Cora is cade blean, a via berle, eg pubble na groc, agus ga adshin, pacht vidde a huelgan. Is buin a hunal shin gafoil. Shully tlachia de shin, and chant a duart maher, law chermud mada onun, and nullig slake erin a bale nahuya. Crock on rua is the next one over, Paul Nishtilla is the far side of that, and below this is what they're called Bonagavna. Bein and cheadur agam na hanin nuchasin na chlishtal in sa sprab a tajanra le kiongkri ja.
Next up is Killian O'Regan.
So this is just a little hyphen. Lightning slashes tree, river consumes village homes, sun rises again.
Thank you, Gillian. And next up is Richard.
I think the hardest thing in the world is to not know what you call yourself.
Yeah. You get over it.
I was kind of torn between doing a short story, one that I've recently kind of come up with a concept for.
Do the story!
Yeah, I'll do the story. that's right. Nothing worse than a badly formed story. So, but anyway, I think we all have to get buses at certain stages of our lives. And I think for most of us, it's not a terribly enjoyable experience. You know, you never really know when they're going to show up. Unless you get that bus regularly, you never really know where it's going. You never know how long it's going to take. You never really know who you're going to sit next to. And all in all, I just don't like it. It's a horrible, messy experience. But on certain occasions, you have to get the bus, but you don't have any money to get the bus. And there's a dynamic there that was presented to me recently by two different individuals, which I thought was very interesting. And the first time this happened was in Dublin City Centre. And this man walked up to me and he said, "I'm sorry, mate, do you have €2 for the bus?" And I said, "Oh, Jesus, let me see." And he goes, "Oh, please, you know, my wife's in hospital and she's giving birth to our first child. I just can't miss it." And I said, in my head, I was like, "Jesus Christ." And then, you know, thinking about it, I was like, I'd like to imagine I'd be better prepared. But I wasn't sure. At the same time, like, your inner morality and, you know, you're trying to bring a karmic, you know, development to the world, you're going to be like, okay, well, if this man clearly needs my help, he needs to get, you know, come in to see his wife giving birth. And so I said, "Oh yeah, you know, oh, there's the bus, here's €2, do you want me to here, go for it?" And he goes, "Oh yeah, thanks very much," and he walked away. And I was like, "No, the bus," and he was like, "Yeah." And I thought to myself, well, that's a man whose wife probably isn't giving birth. I didn't need to get the bus. And that struck me as you know, it was a really odd interaction. But then, the reason I wanted to tell the story is 3 days ago, I was outside CUH. It's near where I live, and I was walking up the road, and this man came up to me, and it was like an explosion had gone off on his face. There was blood streaming down the scars, and he walked up to me and he says, "Is this the way to Skibbereen?" And I said, "Technically." And he goes, "Good." And I said, do you need to get the bus?" And he was like, "No money." And just walked off. And I'd like to imagine that in that given circumstance, and keep in mind for you foreigners, Skibbereen is 2 days' walk from Cork City. I'd like to keep in mind that I would like to imagine that it'd be like that second man with that moral integrity to just go for it. But, you know, I started evaluating my character and I realized recently that I swipe right on an ex of mine on Tinder. So I really don't know what sort of direction I'm going in anymore.
I don't know. One of the other.
You're right ahead. Just call him Dick.
Dick Pierce. It's
Bushhead Dick. Piercing.
It's the name. Named after my Uncle Willie.
Next up is Stanley Nutt.
I was very, very, very worried at the outset of the open mic, but thought of the way through that it was going to be a complete comedy night because I'd be completely fucking out of place by the time we got there. Anyway, this one's got a Wuthering Heights thing as well, but it's very, you won't notice that. It's just something I know. This is called "All We Ever Look For Are Moments of Pleasure." Warm and soothing breathing between a man and a woman. Dreaming before dawn. Strange phenomena in morning fog over Lake Tahoe. Aspects of the sensual world passing through misty air. A lily moving under the ivy. The infant kiss. The kick inside. One snowflake in an endless sky of honey. A blue sunset violin symphony. A constellation of the heart on top of the city. A nocturne among angels. Night-scented red shoes, reaching out to be in love. Wow. Feel it.
Thank you, Sandy. And our last reader of the night is Kieran McCartan.
Where is he?
Loving two babes.
At least he knows what to call you.
We rehearsed that. Rehearsed that for ages. Okay, and this is a really short poem, and it's called Thinking of Experimenting. The experiment was a success, for it yielded a result. Whether it was the result that was hoped for or otherwise makes no bearing on the value of experimenting.
I read somewhere recently, and I'm paraphrasing, that a poet's also not sourcing it, or yeah. A poet is someone, not someone who has poetic feelings, but someone who can reproduce poetic feelings in others. And the various readers, both from UCC and on the open mic and in the Five Word Challenge, have certainly provoked some feelings in me. And I think it's been a great night. And just a big round of applause for all of you.